Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
All right, let's try something new. Take it away, Scott.
Okay, wow, that was pretty quick. Ben, I thought today we would talk about the NASCAR Car of Tomorrow.
Car of Tomorrow?
Yeah, that's right.
That sounds pretty pretty impressive.
Well, yeah, it sounds like space talk, right?
Yeah, it's, yeah, oh, yeah, I love right. That.
No, not really. Actually, it's already in use and has been for a year or so, maybe even a little bit longer, maybe two at this point. And for some reason, they still call it the Car of Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Yeah. I'm sorry. I know it's lame. It just felt like it does feel a bit science fiction like. But if it's the Car of Tomorrow, but they're using it today, obviously the name sounds awesome. But what's really behind this?
Well,
what's the difference?
What's behind it is safety. Of course, NASCAR is interested in making races safe. And the drivers, they want to go fast, and guess who wins? The NASCAR Association, who decides, or the body of NASCAR decides that, you know, well, we need to slow things down a bit, you know, make these vehicles stand up a little better during wrecks. In the year 2000, I think there were a few deaths in NASCAR in that particular year, and of course there was, you know, one or two afterwards as well, but for the most part, they said, we've got to change something because we can't have these guys going this fast. And, you know, we have to do something right now.
Especially after the death of racing legend Dale Earnhardt Sr.
That's right, Sr. Yeah, Junior's still very much with us. And he's actually, we'll find out that, oddly enough, Junior is not a fan of the Car of Tomorrow. Or at least he wasn't in the past. I think he's coming around to it now.
Well, let's take a closer look. Do you want to take a closer look at some of the features behind this?
I would, yeah. A couple of things. I've got a short list here of things that the developments of the advancements that they've made, or that NASCAR has made, or they think they needed to make, and we'll see how it pans out here. For one thing, new cars are boxier. You know what? Actually, let me start with one other thing.
Okay.
That's fine to say that they're boxier, but we've got this whole list. All the cars are exactly the same now, Ben.
Exactly the same.
Yes, they are. They're exactly the same. The only difference is the manufacturer engine. And the engines are very, very much regulated by NASCAR as well. So NASCAR is moving towards kind of a spec racing series where everybody is on an exactly equal plane. It used to be that the vehicles had different templates. So if you were in a Toyota, if you were in a Ford, if you were in a Dodge, you had a different template that your vehicle had to fit, you know, for the pre-race inspection.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with the Car of Tomorrow, every vehicle has to fit that same template, that same frame. So, really, the only thing that's unique on these cars would be the engine, of course, which, again, is very strictly regulated.
Right.
But also there's, you know, the decals. And, you know, they make it appear as if it's a Toyota, whatever they race. And
Toyota template.
Yeah, that's right. So, kind of strange the way things have developed here.
Do you see my confused face?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, I'm a little bewildered. I did not see that coming because the difference between the vehicles based on the manufacturer was one of the salient features.
Yeah, that was originally one of the main purposes of this, is that it was stock car racing.
Yeah.
And, you know, you would race stock cars that came from the factory. That's long ago gone away, that, you know, they're not really the cars from the factory. Mm-hmm. They have, you know, decals instead of headlights and things like that. You know, they're real, and they're very purpose-built race cars. However, you don't see any variation in the field at all. It's all equal. I mean, it looks exactly, every vehicle looks the same except for the exterior treatment, you know, the paint scheme and the decals that they apply.
Man, so that's why it's the Car of Tomorrow and not several different cars of tomorrow.
Yeah, that's right. It's NASCAR's Cars of Tomorrow. Yeah. So I guess we can get back into our list here, but.
Yeah, let's go back to boxy though.
Oh, sure. Yeah. It's boxier. Really? Yeah, yeah.
Because it seems like that would make it I imagine it's boxy to decrease the likelihood of a fatal accident.
Well, it kind of. That has more to do with aerodynamics because they wanted to slow it down a bit. NASCAR wanted to slow the vehicles down. So they're
slow it down.
Yeah, they wanted to slow it down for safety. Yeah, they wanted the speeds were getting up there just too high. They were taking too much advantage of the draft. It's just... You'd have to really investigate this to understand why they did this. I mean, you'd have to go back to the, you know, 10 or 12 or even 15 years and read about how progressively the cars just got faster and faster and faster. And, the introduction of restrictor plate racing to reduce speeds, because they were just getting too fast. They were unstable, dangerous racing practices. You know, there's a lot going on. Mm-hmm. And they finally, even with restrictor plate racing. Uh-huh. The speeds are just ridiculously fast in these cars. I mean, they're way up there. They're near 200 miles per hour, which is pretty fast, I would say.
Yeah.
And accidents, of course, severe and sometimes fatal.
And probably more frequent as well, because the driver's reflexes can only increase to a certain extent.
That's right. There's always something that they call it the big one in a race. There's always a big one, which means that, you know, these guys are following so closely that if one car, you know, takes a spill, every one of them just collides right into that one. It just, you know, it's a giant pileup. You see it on every, you know, weekend newscast usually.
Sure.
That's the highlight that makes the news real.
It's a deadly domino effect, right?
Yeah, that's right. And sometimes, you know, in the past it was actually deadly. So they're doing everything they can to slow them down.
Okay, so what else are they doing?
Well, of course, that boxier design leads to less aerodynamic design as well. You know, so they are slower. There's a rear wing, which is adjustable. That helps, you know, them give a little bit more control. So it allows more downforce, less downforce. So they're making it a little tunable, but not much.
Okay.
And another tunable feature is the front splitter. The front splitter is that extremely low front end piece that looks like it's scraping the ground.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and it has looks like little rods that attach it to the body, and those are adjustable. And again, that increases downforce, just kind of directs the air either over the car or underneath the car, depends on how you have it adjusted.
I've heard, okay, now I don't want to spoil the list. I've heard that one is especially unpopular.
The splitter?
Yeah.
Why is that?
I heard that people don't like it because they associate it also with reducing the aerodynamic nature of the vehicle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. Because the older vehicles, if you look at a car just before the Car of Tomorrow came out, they didn't have that, of course. Mm-hmm. It was more of a flat front end, but it was extremely low. It was right on the ground. But that splitter kind of makes you have to do a little bit of adjustment here and there, and there's a lot more fine-tuning that goes on with that splitter than you would know.
Yeah,
I mean,
especially
it's delicate. Yeah. So what else do they do? They made it bigger inside. There's more room inside the vehicle, so they feel. I mean, I can assume that that's a strange feeling when you get into a race car and there's a lot more room inside it. Usually, you'd think it would be smaller.
Right. Yeah.
But they've made it roomier, and the reason is that there's a few reasons, mostly for the crumple zones.
Okay.
So that we've talked about crumple zones, I think, in the past, is that, you know, that gives the room, the car room to collapse around you a little bit more. Even if it's, you know, a few inches, it makes a big deal.
Sure.
They've added foam to the doors, so that, you know, on the side, especially on the right side, where, you know, most tracks you're turning left all day long.
Right. So
that's the side of the car that would be in contact with the wall. Near the driver as well, there's foam, of course. Let's see, they've also moved the seating position so it's more in the center of the vehicle, which makes sense.
That makes sense, yeah.
A little safer, you know, on the left mm-hmm. side then. Let's see, another thing is that they've made it taller, so there's more headroom.
Oh.
Yep, and
okay.
Let's see, there's a stiffer seat so that, you know, when you're cornering, I guess there's real high G-forces involved, and the seat actually kind of misshapes or, you know, bends and deforms with you as your body presses against it, and they made it a little stiffer so that, you know, the driver stays in position a little better, more in control.
Okay, well, that all sounds pretty reasonable. I know that the NASCAR commission people might think they're party poopers of a sort,
mm-hmm.
right, for slowing the vehicles down.
Yeah.
But it sounds like a good idea. One interesting fact that I read about this is that since all these cars weigh the same, there's actually a rule about the distribution of weight as well, that a certain amount of weight, I think a little more than 1,600 pounds, has to be on the right side of the car because they're more likely to have a dangerous crash into the right wall.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So the overall weight of the vehicle isn't equal from left to right, is what you're saying?
I don't believe so, no. Mm-hmm. I think it's actually let's see, I don't have the numbers in front of me,
mm-hmm.
but I know that slightly more than half of the weight of the car.
Oh, very interesting. Yeah, very good. I didn't know that. Trying to think of anything else that that they've done to this vehicle that, you know, is widely unpopular. I guess that's where we should go next, is to say that it's not only unpopular with the drivers because, you know, of all the things we just mentioned, that, you know, they're slower and, you know, bigger inside. And they're having to adjust, really. It's just it's growing pain period, I guess.
Growing pains, yeah.
Yeah. But the fans also don't like it.
Oh, I've heard they hate it.
Yeah, they do.
I've really, and you know, it makes sense because what do people love the most about NASCAR? It is fast, fast, fast.
Yeah, that's right. And I think a lot of people like watching the wrecks as well. Now, there's still plenty of wrecks.
Sure.
We saw a big one recently at Talladega. Carl Edwards, I think it was, the one that ripped into the fence at Talladega.
Oh,
went airborne.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what happened there. I mean, that was, there's a lot of analysis of what's going on, so check it out and find out what the latest is. But of course, there's some extremely close drafting happening, and you know, just there's a lot of different things that happened at that point. But he did end up going airborne. But the story here is that he was okay. And when you look at that wreck, that was a horrific wreck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he was safe.
Now, was he in one of these cars?
Yeah, he was in a, yeah, that's right, he was in a Car of Tomorrow.
Really lends some weight to their decision then.
Yeah, in fact, there have been several really, you know, just horrible accidents that have happened in the Car of Tomorrow, and drivers have been safe so far. So, and it's proven itself already as a safe car. You can't say that, you know, they wouldn't have held up in the other cars as well.
Right.
Just no way to say that, but, yeah, it seems like it's working out all right.
So when did the Car of Tomorrow actually come out?
Let's see. It came out in March of 2007. That was the first race. So that's a couple of years now.
Yeah.
And it was scheduled to be used just, you know, partially, just here and there, for the 2008 racing season. However, they decided to go with it for the entire 2008 racing season. So 2008 was really the first full NASCAR season with the Car of Tomorrow.
It's successful.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very successful.
So can we still call it the Car of Tomorrow?
Yeah, yeah, we still do, which is strange. I mean, Car of Today is kind of thrown around a little bit. You know, you might see that on a few sites, just people being kind of silly with it. But really, the Car of Tomorrow is what they are going to stick with.
I think, I mean, yeah, I guess I see that it works. Now, let me ask you a question that I bet is just on the tip of our listeners' tongues, especially if they're race fans.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any chance, in your opinion, that this car design would get, I guess, rethought or maybe retracted?
The entire design or elements of it?
Right. Would we go back to – is there any chance that we would go back to the template cars of the past?
No. No, no, I don't think so. I think they've, you know, put their foot down. They've spent so much money and so much time invest. You know, there's so much time and money invested in this design. And really, I mean – the drivers are beginning to accept it even more now. It's less of an issue this year than it was last year. Remember, last year was the first year where they had the full season with the car.
Right.
This year, you know, they're kind of getting into the groove of it, I guess. You would say that, you know, they're figuring out the vehicle.
And there's a trade-off there, but on one side of the balance, you know, staying alive is pretty awesome.
Yeah, it is pretty awesome to stay alive, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, one thing, though, I do think that they would fine-tune, you know, NASCAR may even fine-tune this or adjust it a bit. They may eventually, you know, go back on, you know, they may make a larger fuel cell. I don't know.
Because
that's one other thing that we didn't mention is it has a smaller fuel cell.
Oh.
And it's thicker, I believe, so that, you know, there's less chance of puncture. But, you know, things like that, they may adjust just to, I don't know, keep things interesting.
Now, let's, I've got one, two more questions before you go.
Mm-hmm.
First, do you think that it is possible for the improvements of a Car of Tomorrow or the future cars of, I guess, tomorrow's in the distance?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's possible for the designers and the engineers of NASCAR to create a car that can go back up to, you know, the 200 or so mile per hour range safely?
I definitely do. The thing with the higher speeds is that if you look at, you know, let's say Formula One or IndyCar, those travel much faster than NASCAR.
Sure.
And, you know, they're real high speed. Not that NASCAR isn't. I'm just saying that, you know, IndyCars are, you know, like 220 miles per hour or even faster.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I believe that a Formula One car will achieve something like 240 if it was, you know, flat out long run, but they don't normally get that fast because they're on road courses.
Right.
But, those are, you know, if you look at them, there's not much around them. Those are open wheel race cars. And they're, you know, the driver's head is exposed. There's no windshield. So NASCAR is really, you know, they're in a much larger vehicle. You know, it's much more, they're much more encased in that vehicle. And I don't see any reason why they couldn't make them much safer, make them go much faster. But I think on these super speedways, you know, there's this whole aerodynamic twist that comes in that, might make it pretty dangerous. Because when you're going that fast and you spin around backwards, that's where the real trouble starts.
So for our listeners, you've heard it here. Don't think of this as a plateau. Think of this kind of a step. Think of it as a step on the way back to the speeds we know and love.
Yeah, I think so. I think they can, you know, go faster and faster and be safer and safer at the same time.
Final question.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, you see this one coming. This is what I ask you this almost every time. Would you personally? Would you race in NASCAR before or after the Car of Tomorrow? Would you have tried it?
I love racing. However, I'm not a huge NASCAR fan. I'm, you know, I mildly interested. I'll watch it if it's on, but I don't, you know, carve out time in my schedule to watch NASCAR. I'm more of an open wheel fan. And I think I would do it anyways just because I love racing. Like I said, it's fun. I'll race go-karts or, you know, lawnmowers, whatever. It doesn't matter as long as they're evenly matched and it's fun. So, hey, I think I would. How about you?
Oh, man, yeah, of course. I have no impulse control. Yeah, if I was walking – okay, if I was supposed to plan it in advance – no, Scott, probably not. However, if I was walking by and someone – hopped out of one of those cars and said, "Hey, Ben, do you want to drive this?" It probably would not even occur to me to say no until 2 days later.
So you may not even be able to hit the Richard Petty experience down in Florida or anything like that because you'd have to plan that a week ahead of time. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, you know, synchronicity works pretty well for people like me. I might just happen to be there, but you know, I'm being, I guess, a little bit flippant about. But yeah. I honestly would love to be in a race. I really enjoy the idea watching them. This is odd. Watching them makes me a little bit nervous because I don't want to see people in horrific accidents. Mm-hmm. But being in one would be spectacular.
I've been in a NASCAR race truck before with on the Chrysler test track with a guy named Walker Evans, old timer. I think he's an off-road racer. But he was driving a NASCAR race car. And the funny thing is that it was a media ride and drive event a few years ago.
Okay.
And Chrysler test track is pretty big. Mm-hmm. A lot of speed can be had there. And it was the end of the day, and the car wouldn't start. The truck wouldn't start. Oh, so this made him mad, really mad. You know, I'm in this passenger seat, you know, the media ride-along seat, you know. And this is a real NASCAR race truck, okay? So the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series at the time, it's something else now. And he tried it and tried it and tried it, and it wouldn't start. And I thought, well, I'm not going to get to race. And he started swearing and waving his arm out the window to get somebody over to push start the car. And once it started, once they pushed it and got it started,
yeah,
that anger came out on the racetrack. I'll tell you, he really, really hit it. I mean, it was fast, and I don't think – I've ever experienced anything like that, like a flat turn like that. It stuck so well. But it was extremely fast and extremely fun and really loud. But I'll never forget it. It was a lot of fun. And if I were in control of that, I can imagine how much fun that would be, you know, just for lap after lap after lap. So if you get a chance to do, you know, your Richard Petty experience or whatever you want to go to, do it. I would say even if it's just a ride along day, it's worth it.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
And I guess this is usually the part where we point out that we have an excellent article on the site for people who want to learn more about this, how NASCAR's Car of Tomorrow works, and people can visit that. But before we head out, I've got, and, you know, before we do our usual goodbyes, I've got a little bit of listener mail. How about you?
I'm ready for it.
Okay. We've gotten some pretty interesting mail, wouldn't you say, Scott?
I would say so, yeah. Keep it coming, though.
Yeah, please keep it coming. We love it. We love it. It's the best part of our day.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot of fun.
And we received an email from Charles, who very kindly wrote in to say, you know, I think you've seen this one, Scott.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I love your show, really enjoy the conversations. And then he points out, and this is my bad. He says, in your conclusion, you state, feel free to send an email to Scott and I when it should be Scott and me, following the object of the preposition rule. Thank you so much, Charles. And he was super nice about it. He ends it. We keep up the good work. Hopefully you'll notice that now we refer to ourselves as us.
Okay. I'll let Ben say that he will refer to us that way. However, I probably will still screw things up and say it the wrong way.
Well, then that just makes us more
human.
Yeah, human.
Yeah. It's force of habit, I guess.
Well, you know, it's enjoyable. We'll switch it up. But
yeah.
Thanks again, Charles.
Do our best.
Yeah, thanks, Charles.
Hey, I have a piece of mail as well if you want to get into a question, an actual question.
Oh, yes.
Okay, this one comes from Greg. Greg is from Northern Ireland.
Oh.
Yeah, wow. I know. Kind of crazy, this worldwide thing, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so Greg's question was, I'll just read this here, just a couple of lines, not very long.
Okay.
I was wondering about why the cheap cars on the market, I think he means inexpensive, never look like supercars. I can understand why a cheap car cannot perform like a supercar, but why are there no impressive looking cheap cars? Is there an extra cost in designing them? I think that a cheap car with normal performance but with supercar looks would be a big seller.
Oh, good call, Greg.
Mm-hmm. I think he's right. I think it would be a big seller.
Yeah. Well, why do you think the inexpensive cars don't look like the higher end ones?
My personal thought is manufacturing cost. I know you don't have the engine and the suspension and everything of a supercar, but it takes a lot of money to engineer a vehicle that goes together that well and looks that way. It's just cheaper to make plastic parts that are they're rounded and simple and adhered, you know, that are simple. Everything is simple.
Yeah.
And that's the key to it. I mean, if you have this exterior shell that's this, you know, looks like a wild kit car.
Right.
Plus, you know, there's also the other idea that, you know, I don't know, it's kind of a dud to have a car that, you know, looks great but is super slow and just doesn't perform and, you know, that it's a cheap car.
I see.
I don't know. It's kind of like if you had a Lamborghini kit car and you put a four-cylinder engine in it, or even smaller. You know,
is that a bad idea? Because I've got the kit on the way. No, I'm kidding.
You need to buy a new engine.
Oh man, yeah. What do you think?
Do you think there's a reason?
You know what? I think you've given an excellent reason. It also sounds like one thing we can consider. A lot of these companies, a lot of these car manufacturers sell multiple lines of vehicles. Some are really high-end and some are more mid-range or even low-end. And if they're selling both of these things and they're making money off both lines, it's not in their interest to have an inexpensive car look like the high-end one. They want to have everybody, as many people as possible, buying cars. So maybe companies are keeping that line on purpose. I don't know. What do you think?
That's an excellent point. Very good.
Really?
Yeah, that's good.
Oh, thanks, man.
That's good thought.
You know, I just made that one up.
Good thought. But you know what? I think we'll both agree, though, that they could do a little better job with them.
Oh, agreed.
There's no need for some of the cheap cars to look the way they do, I don't think.
Yeah, I'm with you and Greg.
Spruce it up just a little bit.
Yeah, and you know what? We've got those earlier episodes. How the Tata Nano works, which is the epitome of a inexpensive. Well, the cheapest car on earth, right?
The world's cheapest car.
Yeah, and then we define luxury car. I think in another podcast,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Well, I think that was some awesome listener mail. But all right, let's say somebody is cruising around howstuffworks.com. They're looking at a couple of articles. They've got some thoughts brewing. And they want to hear some information straight from the source on all things automotive. What do they do?
Well, they can contact us at highspeedstuff@howstuffworks.com, and we'll try to answer all of our email. You know, it's not always possible to get to everyone, but we make a pretty good attempt at it, I think, don't you?
I think we do a pretty good job.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do a great job.
Oh, thank you. Likewise.
Oh, you're too kind. For our listeners out there, thanks for tuning in, and please catch us next time.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.